Hello, and welcome to the Translation Company Talk, a weekly podcast show focusing on translation services and the language industry. The Translation Company Talk covers topics of interest for professionals engaged in the business of translation, localization, transcription, interpreting, and language technology. The Translation Company Talk is sponsored by Hybrid Links. Your host is Sultan Ghaznawi with today's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Translation Company Talk podcast. Today we are going to hear from Teresa Toronio from Malt about how you can take the results of a localization audit and apply them to your practice inside an enterprise. This is the second part of my conversation with her. Last year, she discussed how to implement an enterprise localization audit. If you haven't listened to that conversation, feel free to look it up on this podcast. It is worth a listen. Teresa is a localization manager with more than 11 years of experience working with languages and localization. She has a wide scope of experience in all roles, including translator, localization specialist for a specific market, localization project manager, and localization lead for Europe and the Middle East. Over the years, she has worked in setups with in-house linguists, LSPs, and freelancers, and with flows that went from very mature with more than 35 languages to new flows with only 5 languages. She has touched many types of content, but always with a focus on software as a service, first with Klook and then with Pecan and Workday. She loves languages and cultures and has lived in the United States, Germany, Belgium, Italy, Denmark, and the Netherlands, though she is originally from Seville in Spain. Welcome back to the Translation Company Talk podcast, Teresa.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be back.
It is so good to have you back. And for the interest of people who haven't heard your first interview, can you please introduce yourself to colleagues listening to you for the first time?
Yeah, absolutely. And not a lot has changed since the last time we talked. So I'm going to repeat a bit myself. But yeah, I'm originally from Spain. I have lived in many countries, but I'm actually joining this interview from The Hague in the Netherlands. Okay. I love language and culture and technology. So when I started in the localization industry, I was like, yes, this is decidedly where I want to stay. And I have worked in many positions within the localization industry, but now for a year, I am a one-person show creating the strategy for the product localization at Malt.
It was not too long ago when we spoke on this podcast and you talked in very detail about how everything, you know, what you do today at Malt. You just mentioned that. But please give us an update on what you have been up to lately. What's been going on in your world?
I will tell you what probably everyone else is also telling you or like what everyone else is doing. I am, of course, diving into the world of AI and machine translation. So we did have a translation tool, but it was not a TMS. So we integrated a TMS in January and setting it up to leverage AI-powered machine translation. And together with that, I'm also working more officially with the other departments. I remember I told you I was officially in charge of product, but of course, I was also working with other types of content, and indeed now it's becoming slowly more official, and I'm helping them reduce manual work that they do, so increase automation. And of course, the TMS is going to help a lot with that as well. And something that I love is there is this very cool initiative at Malt that once a year they have an internal tech conference, and I joined in November last year their tech conference, and I spoke about internationalization. And now I'm working very closely with the developers on precisely internationalization at Malt. So that's what I'm doing now.
You have your plate full, and it sounds like you're not just doing localization, but you're also doing evangelization, because you are educating people who are working in the upstream processes to prepare content for localization.
Definitely. And I think that is such an important part of our job, you know, to take the stand and to take the floor and to actually show what we can offer.
From your vantage point, Teresa, how does the enterprise localization landscape look like today?
It's a complex and challenging situation, I think. It's, of course, that I'm not going to say anything new. It is a difficult moment for companies. And I think especially in the tech sector, it can be a bit scary. There are layoffs. Technology, of course, is helping or not, depending on what side you are. You know, machine translation, artificial intelligence. And it seems like people are very worried about, oh my God, what is going to happen in their industry? Are some of the the job going to become obsolete? I personally find it very interesting, all these challenges and changes that are happening. From my point of view, it is more than changing the way in which we work. It's changing the way in which we think and the way in which we plan. And just to give you an example where maybe my budget, I had 100 euros and I could translate 300 words, it doesn't mean that in the future I will only have 50 euros. Maybe it means that with those 100 euros, I will be able to translate 300 words from product and 300 from marketing. Or maybe I will be able to buy a tool that will allow me to automate and increase the volume or maybe the quality. So what I see is, yes, it's a bit scary. People are, of course, some people are losing their job and are having to rethink about what they do. But on the other hand, we are being challenged to rethink the way in which we work. And I think that that's a good thing.
With that, I would like to maybe dive in through, the details of all of that as we continue this conversation. I have invited you to speak about a topic which is basically the second part of our conversation on localization audit. Last time you mentioned what an enterprise should be doing in terms of an audit to figure out where they are with localization. Today, I want you to shed some light on how you can take the results of such an audit and implement it in your organization. That's a monumental task in itself. Let's recap first. What is an enterprise localization audit and why is it important?
Like we mentioned during our previous conversation, you will hear the word audit a lot in connection to money. But specifically, a localization audit is that and then some more. So it's really getting the lay of the land and getting like a 360 view of everything that is being done in your company in terms of localization. So a localization audit is ultimately a tool to measure at what stage the localization effort is at your company. And it helps you understand what has already been done, what is being done today, and what could be done in the future. Most importantly, or at least most importantly for me, because I'm also the strategy person at Malt for localization, it is a tool to align the effort in terms of localization with the direction and the priorities of your company. So another thing that we mentioned, and I think maybe would be good to include in our recap, it's what should a localization audit include? And some of the things that we mentioned were budget and expenses and any data available connected to return on investment, number of languages you work with, number of markets in which you operate, the volume of the content you work with and how that has changed over time, the types of content you work with officially, like in my case, product, and then unofficially, what other teams are you working with? Are you working with at the end of the day? The localization process and the workflows with a particular attention to automation. So what is automation and what is being done manually? Quality assurance, tooling, stakeholder, communication and visibility. And there I also mean evangelization of localization and the current localization roadmap that you have in your company and how it is connected to the company objectives, like the general objectives for the entire company. And I think that's a pretty condensed summary of what we mentioned last time.
With that introduction about the audit out of the way, the localization audit that is that we've now put out of the way, let's dive into how we can take the learnings from the audit and apply that to the organization, to the processes, to overall structure of what we are doing or what the organization is trying to accomplish. Teresa, please talk about how do you interpret the results from your audit before you implement them?
Yes, we briefly touched on this during our previous talk. And just as a reminder, I ended up with a very, very long report. And this report included all the things that had been done and were working, all the things that were being done, what worked, what was not working, and all the things that were not being done, together with my Google Sheet with all the data that I could find and all the data that I would ideally want to have. And now that I've mentioned that or that I've refreshed that, going back to your question, once you have that audit, that list that can be in different formats, whatever works best for you, then you look at your company's OKRs or common goals or whatever system they use to take the company in the right direction. And you look at what aspects of your audit align with these objectives and which ones do not. And you will have some items that don't align at all. And you should write down why they will not be prioritized, archived. You will then have some items that partially align, and there you will write down how they align and how they don't, and what would be the potential impact and effort. And here, note that when I say effort, I mean the investment it would be in terms of money, time, and resources. So what would be the investment of prioritizing these items that are partially aligned with the general or common company objective? And then you will have some items that align, if not fully, almost fully with the company objectives. And so again, you write down how they align and what would be the potential impact and effort of prioritizing those items. And by the end of this exercise, you should have, by the end of this process, you should end up with a shorter list of items to consider, and you should be able to prioritize them by using the impact and the effort that you have noted down for each of them.
Let's talk about the ownership of the results. Who's in charge of going through those results? Teresa, is it in the hands of the localization team or decision makers at the enterprise management? Or does this mean that it has to be tackled at a level above within the management?
Before I dive into the answer, spoiler alert, the localization expert or team or localization team should be making these informed decisions. We were talking about evangelization of localization before. It is very important that as localization experts, we go through these results, and only when they have been processed in a way that it's understandable for other stakeholders, they are then presented to other teams or you know, to within the same team, maybe to other experts. And let's remind ourselves that, like I said, we're the experts in what we do. And of course, you want to open the discussion, you want to open the debate, but ultimately, you know what the audit is saying, you know where the company wants to go, and you should be the one deciding as a localization specialist. You should be the one deciding what actions will be most impactful with the budget that you have. So the audit, the results of the audit and how you connect them to the objectives of your company in an actionable way is what is actually going to shift the localization team or the localization function from a deliverables and a passive narrative to a proactive and strategy narrative. So what I'm trying to say here is take up the responsibility. Let's remind ourselves that we are, localization is a growth enabler, and that as such, we should feel comfortable making these choices and making these decisions and asking for our place at the table. And this is true for any expertise. You know, you are the expert and that comes with certain responsibilities. So definitely the localization team, and fight for that, I would say.
You and I talked about a formal structure for this audit, Teresa, but what about a formal structure for the results so you can map them to the corporate KPIs that you have? How do you justify that, for example, increasing the number of words for X market will increase our sales output across the organization to Y level? Let me hear your thoughts on that, please.
Yes, it's a tricky one. Is it okay if I use an example for this one?
Please do.
Yeah, I think it can be maybe more useful for the people listening. Let's say that one of the results of your audit shows that the process that you use to open a new market is inefficient for several reasons. Maybe one is that it lacks ownership. Another one is that it's a very manual process. Another one is that the process is incomplete. And number four, which is the one we're going to focus on, you have identified that the product testing is very expensive and time consuming. And we will go into detail about this farther on during my answer. But let's say that this is what the audit is telling us. And now you look at your company objectives. This is scenario number one. You look at your company objectives and it turns out that growth is not one of the main objectives for the year. And actually opening new markets is not planned for the following 12 months. So would you say this is a priority for you and or the company? Probably not. We will archive it for later and explain why. For example, growth is not a priority for the next 12 months. In fact, we're not going to open any countries for the next month. So that when you reread your audit in 12 months, in 16 months, whenever, you know why you made that decision. Now, let's say scenario two, you have these results from your audit, and now you look at your company's objectives, and growth is indeed one of the three main objectives for the year. In fact, you will be opening three new markets in the next 12 months. It's actually planned, like, I don't know, Q1, this market, Q2, Q3 this market, Q4 this other market. And of course, when you ask yourself, would this be a priority for me and the company? Then the answer is obviously yes. So if the answer is yes, instead of archiving this issue, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the data that we have. And like we were saying before, let's take one specific example, which was the testing of the product before it goes live is expensive and time consuming. And for example, I have the following data. Testing takes 4 full days, and checking and implementing the changes that have been identified during the testing takes up to 5 weeks. It is expensive because it's done maybe in person at one of the locations of the company. So you have to calculate the total expenses of the trips, the hotels, and the salary of these employees that are dedicating their time instead of to doing other tasks to testing the product, which is not their main task. Then you also see that the testing guidelines are not clear and include not only high level or high impact flows, but also low impact flows. And here you could calculate, for example, how many flows are high priority, how many are medium, and how many are low priority or impact, and how much time you're spending on each of these flows. And then you also say you also see that participants actually don't have a good idea of what are errors that need to be fixed, what are bugs that need to be logged for the engineer to fix, and what are actually suggestions. So actually the product is supposed to work like that, and it's not an error, it's not a bug, it's just a suggestion, you would like it to work differently. And here you could measure, for example, how many logged issues were made for each category and how long did it take you to sort through them and put them in the right category. So now you can think about your objectives, which is going back to your question, how do you actually say, well, I'm going to justify this as X percent improvement of this or that. So now that you have your objectives and your KPIs, for example, you can say you will reduce, this could be your KPI, you will reduce the testing time by X percent and you will reduce the expenses by X percent. And now we connect the KPI to initiative. That is your objective. How do you reduce the cost? And for example, it could be the testing is going to be done online instead of in person, or we're going to reduce the testing time by focusing only on high and medium impact flows or priority flows, and we're not going to dedicate time to the flows that are low visibility or low impact. So at the end, you end up with something like this, and this is like the wrap up of my example. You have gone from the result of your audit, you have connected it to the company objectives, you have then identified all the data that you need to make the right decisions and identify the KPI and the initiative, and at the end, you end up with something like this. You have the initiative, do the product testing online or do the testing only for high and medium impact flows and features.
Yeah, one suggestion would be to even automate it, like now we have generative AI, right?
Exactly, or automate it, or even say we don't test. we run it through a tool and then we see what comes out. The KPI impacted is reduce the testing expenses by X percent, and the objective is efficient growth. So you go objective, KPI, initiative, or the other way around, initiative, KPI, objective. And in this case, I'm focusing on the money, but I could be focusing on the time, or I could be focusing on the quality. I could say, how many issues did I identify? How do I change my process so that in the next testing, less issues are identified because the quality of my product is better. So depending on the objective, the KPI and the initiatives will change. But the most important thing is the objective, because it's what connects you to the company objective at a bigger level. It gives you the direction, because at the end of the day, there are, I think any, you were saying before, you have your plate full because there are so many things. And I think if you ask anyone in the industry, in the localization industry, they will tell you that there are a million things that we could be doing every day. But the important thing is about identifying what things you want to do and are necessary for you and your company, and what things you have to say no, and also why not, why you are not doing this.
Teresa, let's say that the audit results were very compelling and impressive, allowing you to determine where the organization is now with regards to localization and giving you a starting point for where you want to be. You were just talking about the objectives. What is the first step in translating these results into tangible and actionable objectives?
Yes, and I think here we are going to focus on the last part of my previous answer, so like how the initiatives, KPI, and objectives are connected. And as I just mentioned, organization, the first step is see if the result is indeed aligned with the objective and main priority of the company. And like you were saying, whether it's the right direction. If they are, then you dissect the data or even gather more data that you maybe didn't have during the audit to have a better, clearer picture. And then you make choices. And we were talking about this just now. You make choices and you cannot apply 100 initiatives to improve one KPI. You cannot undertake 100 initiatives to address one goal because you need to be realistic and you need to be efficient. And also, you normally have more than one KPI and more than one objective to tackle. So making choices and knowing what not to do is as important as what you're actually doing.
Let's talk about change. It's something that always requires a catalyst. And in this case, the business objectives for increased growth normally triggers the audit that presents the case for the change. Can you tell me who decides on the budget, the time, the material and resources needed to implement these changes?
I feel this depends on the maturity of your department and the teams that are involved. I would touch on each element. You mentioned budget, time, materials and tools, and also resources. I would start with budget, normally because that's like the main concern for people is money. So normally you will have a yearly budget for localization and normally include translations and quality, which also include testing and the tooling, like the main categories. Sometimes you can be part of the budget allocation discussion. Sometimes you're not part of that decision and the budget is just communicated to you. This is the money that you have and deal with it. It is part of our job as localization expert to work with the budget that we have and make the best decisions based on, again, the results of our audit and the direction in which the company wants to go. It doesn't matter how much you care about one specific aspect of the audit. If that is not relevant for the company or where the company wants to go, you will have to deprioritize it. And you cannot dedicate the budget to what you think or what you find interesting, but you have to dedicate it to where you know. Where you know that it's going to be needed. And this will, of course, limit the decisions that you can make and the initiatives that you can apply. Like in our previous example, that doesn't mean that you have to sometimes give up on initiatives. You were, of course, saying you could automate the testing, for example, in our previous example. So maybe we save money by automating the testing, and that money that we save, we can use it for something else, better tooling, a new plugin, more quality assurance. And that's in terms of budget. Now I would pass to time. My advice for time is first, create your roadmap by first identifying which initiative or which objectives have to happen by a specific date. So for example, say the opening of a specific market must happen by January 2024 or by January 2025, because there will be a marketing campaign that will happen at the same time, plus promotional events, etc. So that in your calendar is, you know, you cannot move that. That has to happen. But there will be other objectives, other initiatives that you can move around. So first put the ones that have a tight deadline and then move the other ones around, I would say. And so we cover budget and time. I think the other ones were materials and tools and resources. I would say materials and tools next because it's strongly connected to budget. And here there is this Spanish expression. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but there is a Spanish expression that says at the end, the collar costs more than the dog. And I like that expression. I like that expression a lot and I will explain why. But just to explain why I like it so much is because no matter the financial situation of the company I work for, I personally always operate under the assumption that we are trying to reduce cost and increase efficiency. This means that every tool I use, I evaluate first to make sure that the collar does not end up costing more than the dog. And let's use the same example that we have been using up until now. The product testing can happen online, but in order to, or like you can automate it, but actually automating the product testing is going to cost you, I don't know, 150. And having 9 people at the office for 4 days is going to cost you 100. So, okay, so maybe automating it or the tool that could automate the testing, in this case specifically, is not worth it because it's is going to end up costing you more than having the people physically at the office for the 4 days. But then you think, okay, yes, it cost me 150, but I pay 150 and I use it on the three launches of the one that we have in Q1, the one that we have in Q3, and the one that we have in Q4. So at the end, although it costs 150 instead of 100, I am eventually saving 150 because taking 9 people for 4 days 3 times would be 300, and the tool is 150. So ultimately, comparing the two, the tool or the technology to that allows me to automate it is going to be better for me. So I hope that covers the materials and the tools. And I left resources for last because it's the tricky one. How do you convince your team you need an engineer to spend 3 full days working on a project with you? Or how do you convince someone from product that doing translations for the marketing team with the budget that you had for the product translations can benefit you, your team, or the company? So I would say here there are like two scenarios. Scenario number one is you can do it on your own, then there is no problem. The important thing is to be realistic and don't bite more than you can chew and say, well, I can do it, so I can do it all. And then you have no life and you end up doing a lot of things on your own. So if you can do it on your own, that doesn't mean that you should not be critical of what you're taking on. You are your own resource. So use yourself and your time also mindfully. And the difficult part, I think, or like the most difficult part is when you need resources from other departments or you need to use your resources to support another department. And here, what you need is data. So I could give you an example. So imagine that your customer support team received tickets from users about content that is not clear enough, about how to add their bank details to get paid for the services that they provide. And it turns out that the content, this content that is not clear, because it contains complex HTML, the developers decided to hard code it. So every time the customer care team needs to change the content, they have to open a ticket to the developers, telling them how they want the content to be changed. And then the developers, because they have a pile of work that is humongous, they take about 3 to 4 weeks to make these changes from the day in which maybe the client gave the complaint to until the day in which it is changed in the system, maybe a month went by. And then you say, okay, I know that customer care receives 8 tickets per month related to this issue, and that addressing those tickets take them about X hours every month. You know that they open X number of tickets to developers every month, and that it takes the developers around X hours of work to make the changes. You know, if the customer care team had access to that content, so if it were not hard-coded, but it was actually accessible to them through, for example, a TMS, we would reduce the tickets by X percent, and we would reduce the time spent both by the customer care team and the engineers by X. And you also know that you would provide a better experience for the user because the change would happen almost immediately, maybe in 3 days instead of 3 to 4 weeks because you have to wait on the developer. So when you have this kind of data, the conversation with your manager or with the manager of the engineering team is very difficult because you're not telling them, I want you to spend 3 days working on my project because it's important to me. You're telling them, I want you to spend 3 days working on my project because it's going to save you 3 days a month for the rest of the year. And it's going to save this other team 3 days a month for the rest of the year. And it's going to increase the customer satisfaction. So it's a different conversation.
Speaking of data, Teresa, let me actually zoom in on this specifically in the context of localization. Let's talk about how incumbent localization teams, the teams that have been traditionally working over the years in an enterprise, things have worked very well. How can they reevaluate their effectiveness and how do they want to modernize themselves or align themselves better with their organizational objectives? So how would they interpret that data from the audit and make changes?
I like this question because it is the most common situation. You normally have already a working team and have to think about what is coming next. And making an audit is a fantastic first step to reevaluate your situation and the situation of your team. Probably the most challenging part is once the audit is in progress, so once you're conducting it and once it is completed, it is important, of course, to keep a critical and open mind. And the reason why I'm saying this is because it's very easy to start at a new company or to be an external contributor and evaluate it with no qualms, just like very harshly. It is a different matter entirely to look at what you are doing and the decisions that you have made and be honest about it. And I'm not saying be honest about it because it's bad. No, known. In my experience, in fact, localization teams tend to be too humble. So when I say honest, I don't mean only to be realistic, of course, about what is not working or is working, but it's not aligned with the company, but also taking credit for the things that you're doing great and being vocal about it. You know, we did this audit, just so that you know, company, we are acing this, and that, as well as, okay, here we change it and here we should start doing. And once they have the results, going back to your question, I personally find it to be a more fun process for these teams because they already have objectives, they already have KPIs, and presumably they have a lot of data. So they would be assessing from the real needs highlighted from the audit and the company's global objectives, which objectives and KPIs that they have currently are aligned and which ones are not. Some will align perfectly and can be kept as they are. Some will align slightly and they will need to be adjusted. Some will not be aligned at all and will need to be dropped or deprioritized. And some of them, like we mentioned before, maybe nobody thought about them before or it was never a priority before, and they will need a full new KPI or KPIs and a full new set of initiatives that will have to be created for this specific case.
This podcast is made possible with sponsorship from HybridLinks, a human-in-the-loop provider of translation and data collection services for healthcare, education, legal, and government sectors. Visit hybridlinks.com to learn more.
An audit is just a review of how things are now. So basically, you take a snapshot or a picture of how things are working or not, as you just mentioned, but it needs to be done regularly to make sure the organization is on track. Now, Teresa, how often would you recommend the audit should be performed and its results apply to the organization?
I would say it depends on the type of company. For big corporations, one would expect to have a more long-term strategy that allows for more long-term objectives and KPIs for all departments, I guess, including the localization team. Startups might change strategy and priorities more frequently. Anyone that has worked with or for or in a startup will tell you that it's like the roller coaster. So you need to be more flexible in your approach, also for other teams, not only localization. But because I don't want to say, you know, it depends and not actually give an answer, my advice would be for the companies with the long-term strategy, a review of the audit once a year should be enough. But ideally, this should go hand in hand with the yearly review of the finished year. So say it's the end of 2024. We have a time machine. It's November, December 2024. You take your audit, you review it, but you also connect it to your yearly review, your yearly performance review for the team and for yourself as an individual. And also you connect it at the same time with the roadmap and the planning that you're going to do for 2025. And these three things should always be connected and should always be working as one. And this is for like companies with long-term strategies, so corporate companies. For companies with more changing environments, so maybe a startup or scale-up, depending where they are, I would advise a review in H1 and a review in H2. And in particular, if your company has a half-year review schedule, some companies have only the end-of-year review, but some companies have the half-year review, then I would say the audit review at the same time that you're doing your half-year performance review, and again at the end of the year, together with the roadmap for 2025 and with the yearly performance review of your team and of yours as an individual contributor.
How would you handle data and reports generated by an outsourced audit in case you engage an outside party to perform the audit for you? How do you ensure they capture the data that is critical to your organization?
It's a good question. I have never been in a position where I had to use the data from an outsourced audit. I would say the approach on how to handle the data would not change. What is true, however, is that it's very important that you hire a couple of things that I find important. One is that you hire a company that can do a 360 audit so that you make sure that you select a company that can do all the aspects of your localization strategy and not only some of them like quality or tooling, but really everything. everything that we mentioned in the list at the beginning. And I guess this more than of you selecting the company is how you as a company treat the supplier, so the person that is supporting you with the audit. For me, what is important is to share the most up-to-date information about your company goals and strategy, of course, under a confidentiality agreement, so they can highlight which aspects of the audit might be most relevant to you. In essence, what I'm trying to say is treat them like they are part of your company, like they are colleagues. Don't treat them like people that come from the outside and they're coming to judge you, but treat them like people that have your best interests at heart, that are coming in to help you and to support you and give them all the information and all the material that they need. And ideally, a company that not only provides the audit, so a good audit report, but is also available to support you after the audit is concluded on how you connect it with your objectives and with the KPI. That would be like the dream.
Let's shift gears, Teresa, and talk about how we track the implementation of audit findings. Who is responsible to make sure things don't fall through the cracks? And we know that often happens.
Well, some things will inevitably fall through the crack. It's also a natural, this is like a natural mechanism also for the things that are maybe not super important. But going back to the question, things fall through the cracks mainly, I'm not going to say only, but mainly when we lack the discipline to make sure that we check progress continuously. When maybe the team changes, so for example, now there are layoffs or teams are being restructured and then the ownership changes or the ownership is lost, or there are changes in the priority. So we were talking about startups and scale-ups that maybe you start the year with your audit, you made your decisions, and in H2, the priorities change. They are not anymore what they say they were going to be at the beginning of the year. And this is true for every team. It's not only localization. I mean, how many companies spend weeks preparing a roadmap and OKRs for the next year, and then they never open that file, not even once, until the year is complete. So there is actually no follow-up on what is being done monthly or quarterly or even every half a year. So it's also a matter of discipline, I guess. If the audit is being reviewed every 6 or 12 months and there are comments being added both when an item is prioritized as well and when a topic is not prioritized, nothing should fall through the crack. And when I say adding notes when a topic is not prioritized, there it's really important that when you add notes to your audit, that you add the note not as if you were going to read them, but it's as if anyone with a localization background would have to read it in the future, because you don't know if you will leave the company or if you will change and move into a different position within the company. So you have to ensure continuity. So when you add these notes, when you write the audit, you cannot just add not prioritize, no objective, because you know you're going to understand it, because maybe you won't in 12 months, by the way. But you have to think about, what if somebody else was reading my audit or the results of my audit? Would they understand what I am trying to say here? And as for who should be in charge, it's up to each company, depending on their setup. And again, here we talk about ownership, no? Like who has the ownership. If, for example, there is a QA team, they can oversee reviewing the part of the audit concerning the QA results and initiative. If there is a part about tooling and internationalization, maybe the PM or the localization engineer, if you have one in your team, would be responsible for that. In my case, I am the team, just me. So there's no question about who should do it. I do it because I am the only one that's there. But when the team is bigger, sharing these responsibilities, it's really, really good for engaging as well the team.
Teresa, how do you measure the impact of the localization audit results implementation on the overall organizational objectives and performance? You mentioned KPIs and OKRs earlier, but what is the standard framework or best practices, if you will, that we could apply to make sure that everything is aligned?
Hopefully, ideally, it should happen naturally. And what I mean by this, if you use your audit when you use your audit to create your localization objectives and KPIs and your initiatives, and they are created correctly and aligned with the company objectives and performance, at the end you should have a pretty straight line. Like we were talking about when we were talking about, okay, the company objective is growth, the objective is global efficient growth, and then we had reduced time by X percent or time by X percent, and then we had our initiative. Maybe what we can do is look at some common company objectives and give some examples. for each so that we can see how they align. Some common company objectives are, I'm just going to mention four, but I'm sure there are hundreds, but these are, I think, the ones that come up more often: demand, conversion, growth, and efficiency. So we take the first one, which is demand. For example, it can be connected to brand awareness, where localization plays a key role, of course, in making sure the tone of voice, the brand identity are transcreated to elicit the same feeling and actions on the final user. So you could say the objective, it's demand. According to my audit, there is no tone of voice in the company. So I want to increase the brand identity in the product or in my company. And my initiative is going to be to create a tone of voice guideline and transcreate it for the different markets in which we operate. Another example is conversion, and conversion can be connected to the quality of the microcopy translations, especially in the happy path or the sign up flow of a new user or the payment flow or a marketplace. And here is, if conversion is a big thing for your company, you could say, okay, the objective is conversion. My KPI is going to be to increase the click through or to increase the conversion in the payment by implementing an A/B test. So I'm going to implement an A/B test with the CTA wording. Or for example, more variables can be used to create a more personalized experience for the user, therefore increasing the chance of conversion. So instead of just saying, hello, how can I help you today? I'm going to say, hello, Sultan, how can I help you today? Or I will send you targeted messages as well. So this is directly connected to internationalization, which I was mentioning before, and therefore also localization. If we take growth can be connected to opening a new market, but it can be connected also to adding a new language in an existing market to reach a bigger target within that market that was already open, or maybe even localizing the content to target a specific regional group within the same market. And here it's really easy because you have growth as the objective. The KPI is to have, I don't know, plus X percent of visit in that market. And the initiatives would be to add X language and then measure how the traffic increments in your product after that new language is added. And the last one, efficiency. The last one we will talk about, of course, like I said, there are a lot. Efficiency can be impacted by implementing continuous localization in the product to reduce time to market, or by including machine translation in some types of content to reduce the turnaround time and the cost, or like you mentioned before, by automating product testing. And here again, efficiency and together with growth, I think, are two of the most the easiest ones to measure. If the common objective is efficiency, then maybe your KPI can be reduce the time by X percent or the cost by X percent. And then inside your initiative, I don't know, implement a new TMS, apply machine translation, post editing in 50% of our content, reduce cost in specific languages by X percent by applying machine translation, post editing, etc., etc. So these are some examples.
You chose some of the most important KPIs that actually enterprises I've seen commonly focus on when it comes to these type of efficiencies or improvements that they want to bring in. Let's talk about resources, Teresa. You touched on this earlier. How would organizations with limited resources, you mentioned that you are an army of one within your own organization, how would a company that doesn't have enough resources implement the audit results?
Yeah, we touched on this earlier, and it is a topic very close to my heart because, as I mentioned before, it's one of the challenges I find most interesting. There are many types of resources: time, people, money, tooling. Let's talk about money specifically, because I think it's one of the things that is most connected to the rest, and the principles can then be applied to other categories. And also because if you ask any of my colleagues working closely with me, they will tell you that I'm always looking out for data and efficiency, yes, but also money. So I'm always asking, so what is the business impact of this request, and how is this going to have a return on investment, and how many people are going to read this article? And, you know, so I'm always asking, you know, what it transforms to in terms. So let's focus in terms of resources specifically on money. I'm not saying it's the only resource that counts. I'm just saying there are others, but we also have limited time. So let's just pick this one. And of course, there are many different situations. I would maybe focus on three. And the first one is the budget is big. It looks like you won't have any difficulties. They give you the budget and they tell you, okay, last year you needed this amount. For next year, you have double that amount of money. And we don't need to buy new tooling. We're not opening new markets. We're not opening new verticals. I would encourage any localization manager or team to have the mindset of how to increase the efficiency and reduce the cost, even if that is the case. Your question was specifically about the organizations with limited resources. And these are the two next cases that I wanted to talk about. So the budget is acceptable. So it's limited, but it's not like laughably small. It looks like you might make it, but it could also be that you will go over a budget. And for me, this is the right size of budget. This is where everyone should be, because you will need to find ways to increase efficiency, to reduce costs, and to make sure the people in your team also think critically about how money and resources are spent. And this is a good place to be, because it pushes you to think about how to shift money and resources around so you can do as much as possible. When you are comfortable with the budget that you have, sometimes you don't think critically about how you're spending your money. But when the budget is tight, all of a sudden automation becomes very important, and all of a sudden aspects or like the tooling and the way in which you're connecting your content, etc., how you're centralizing your process and the resources that you're using, all of a sudden they become really, really important. As an example, we had the example before of reducing the cost on the product testing before launching a new market by doing it online or by automating it, or by maybe focusing only on some flows instead of every flow. And maybe part of that money can then be invested on buying a new plugin that will automate part of your flow, therefore, again, saving some money that you can then maybe invest somewhere else. So even if the resources are limited, that is good. It's not a bad thing to have limited resources. It just makes you more critical about what you do and what you don't do. Now, the third case, it's where I wouldn't want to be, is that the budget is quite below what you would need. And it really looks like you're not going to be able to implement the initiatives that you want, or you will definitely go over budget. This is an unpleasant situation to be in. It means that either the company objectives are not reasonable, or they do not resonate with what you decided was going to be your objectives or your KPI. So maybe you didn't make the best issue. So for example, in 2024, the company wants to launch a new vertical and two languages. But the budget that they approved is half the budget that you had the previous year. And the previous year, you didn't open new markets, you didn't open new verticals, you didn't add any languages. So this is obviously not real. And when this happens, a very painful conversation will have to take place to either postpone by 1 year the launch of the new languages or the launch of the new vertical, or they need to increase the budget accordingly to the ambitions of the company. So if you have more money than what you need, still be critical about it. If you don't have the money that you need, painful conversation. And if you have a limited budget, that is the sweet spot.
Do you think there would be a direct correlation between the localization audit findings and the performance of localization team members? Would these results affect their KPIs at a personal level?
I like this question because it touches a bit on management style too, I find. It's a tricky subject. Although on a big level, it depends on how the company handles performance and performance review in connection to the objectives and the KPIs. In my opinion, is ultimately a very subjective topic. And it's very influenced by the manager, the managing style of your direct supervisor or lead. So just to take a step back, there are several theories about whether it is good to connect performance to KPI. So on the one hand, if you connect the goals to performance, this can lead to people having the fear of taking the risk and the mentality of we keep doing things that we have always done them because they work. And I am worried that if I change things and something breaks, I will be, between brackets, punished. in my performance review. But on the other hand, of course, it's important to make people, any person in any team, not only localization, feel that they are the experts and that they are accountable for the choices that they make and that they have the ownership of their. So going back to your question and having said that, the audit will show both where the department is performing well and where we should be doing a great job, but it will also inevitably also show where we are not doing a good job, where we are underperforming as a team and individually, and where we need to improve. When you look at it from that perspective, from like a positive point of view, the audit can be a tool to help teams understand why the choices are made, be part of the setting of their own KPIs and decide on the initiative. So hopefully, yes, it has an impact, and hopefully it is a positive impact that creates the right environment for the teams to challenge and be part of the KPIs and the objective setting, and therefore that they feel more in control of their performance and performance review as a team, of course, but also individually, because I feel that often people are told these are the objectives, these are the KPIs, and these are the initiatives, and you do them. And I think it's much better to say, okay, we did the audit, these are the results, let's look together at the company objectives and let's decide together what is not working and that can work. We know in which direction. You were talking about direction before. We have the direction. We have the, let's say, the target where we want to go. And now you, as an expert, decide how we are going to get there, how we are going to do this.
That's extremely important to determine your direction, as you mentioned earlier, based on this information. But again, at the end of the day, the audit results, if they're numbers or if they're just suggestions, it's information. What do you do with that information? It comes down to someone who has the ability and skills to translate that into action. Let's talk about how you take that into consideration and how things such as technology, for example, changes that your competition have adopted, or external factors such as changing demographics and interpreting your localization audit numbers, how do they affect you? How do you take those into consideration in order to, in a way, modernize? How do you take these findings or information about yourself that you didn't know before and adopt them?
You ask about technology, competitors, and external factors. I find that the changes done by the competition a very interesting one. I would maybe rephrase it to changes implemented by industry peers. We all learn together, and this maybe even more so in the field of localization, where you learn mostly on the job. Having a good network is definitely important, and following up on what peers do, what other companies are doing, is necessary. And I'm going to connect this with what you said before about direction. It is also important to have a critical mind and, know where the limitations or the needs of your specific company are. Of course, there are other companies out there in the same market as Malt, for example, the company I work for. That doesn't mean that our strategy or needs or our main values are the same as our competitors or peers, or products or teams or cultures or tools are also not the same. So definitely, yes, keep an eye out. I don't know if you know the Simon Sinek. Of course, you know him. He does TED Talks and publish Start With Why. He has a thing called the Celery Test. I don't know if you've heard about this, but the the essence is that you must know your company's why very well before you try to fit it into anyone else's strategy, objectives, or even market trends. You know that everyone is doing it doesn't mean you have to do it too. So definitely, yes, keep an eye out, but also keep front and center in your mind. Does that match with our why in our company, with what we believe is important and with our values? And technology is also a bit like that, a bit like the changes made by the competition. Not everything will fit your company. It's important to consider the help that the right technology and the right tools can provide for your company in terms of efficiency. When doing the audit, you also must keep tailing in mind. So especially when it comes to technology and tooling, when you think about what you need, you cannot think about what you need today or what you're going to need in 6 months. But you need to think about, will this support my growth? growth and or ambition in 5 years. So that's also very important in terms of the technology when you're doing the audit, also to keep your mind a bit like farther away from the present. And as for demographics and other external factors, I am a big internationalization fan. If your team is in a position to push for certain markets or languages to be added, then definitely add that to your audit. If your team is not at that stage, then write down what needs to be done to get there. But definitely take a close look at internationalization while you're doing the audit. It's the base of how your content was created and what the real possibilities in terms of localization are. And it will help you adapt to external factors more easily and to be responsive quickly when things change. So for example, if as an European company working with euros, you think you should open the USA, but you don't have the multi-currency, you cannot show your product in dollars, then that might be a blocker. Even if today you're not thinking of growth as a main priority or objective, you should still conduct your audit, not only thinking about today, but also about how you slowly include nationalization best practices so you can adapt to the external factor.
Teresa, what is your ideal localization audit report format or structure? How would you like to see it so it's easy for you to understand and obviously use it?
You said before something that I found particularly interesting. You said you also need a person capable of turning those ideas, numbers into something concrete and actionable. And if you went now to the Paris office and asked my manager and the people that I work most closely with what words define me, they will probably tell you one of the words that would probably come up would be organized, maybe too organized. And the truth is that I have no choice but to be organized because my mind is very chaotic. So I need external tools and guidelines to put order into what goes into my head. So for me, it's particularly challenging because as I say, everything is happening at the same time and thoughts are continuously moving in there. It depends on the type of person that you are. I'm going to give the answer of what works for me. At Miles specifically, we use Notion. So I created a new page there with the full report. And the page, actually, this page in Notion was changing shape continually. I'm saying Notion, but it can be any tool. At the beginning, it was just this never-ending list of items that were divided into categories. So the categories that I mentioned at the beginning, like tooling, stakeholder, communication, data on volumes, on languages. And as I progressed through my audit, I kept adding categories or pieces of information I thought that were missing. And once I had the bulk of that, I started to divide that within each section into what was very good, what was okay, and what could be better. And then the third step was to add yet another section where I was adding the impact and the investment needed, so like the effort needed. And additionally, I had a section of archive things, so things that I'd maybe consulted and I just put them on the archive because I wasn't going to need them, just in case, because you never know. And another list of all the resources that I actually found useful, both internally at Malt, but also externally on the internet, LinkedIn post, blog post, a book that I used during my audit, and I had that reference list as well. And that worked for me. For someone else, it might be more useful to start by having a fixed structure in which to add the information, or maybe use a different type of tool. In my case, like you mentioned, the biggest challenge was to be able to capture my thoughts and take that information and transform it into something physical, useful, and readable. I strongly recommend Getting Things Done by David Allen as a good starting point. I use a lot of his strategies during my audit. We touched on this during our previous conversation, didn't we? There is no official structure to conduct this out there. So it's a bit difficult to have the format.
Teresa, in closing, as we reach the end of this conversation, can you share some thoughts about how our enterprise colleagues can best implement localization audit results as tangible initiatives within their organizations?
It's a challenge, isn't it? But it's a challenge for many teams and departments, not only localization. I will try to focus on maybe five main points that are a bit generic, so not necessarily only for localization, but in general. And the first one is something that we mentioned repeatedly, and it's make sure you know very well the DNA of your company, and what you and that you keep informed and up to date with the company's main goals and objectives. Then prioritizing and saying no, which is very important, will be very easy or much easier. So definitely the why of your company. Number two would be keep a things can always be better mindset. Just because something works or because you have enough budget, it does not mean that things can be better or that you could be spending the money in a smarter way. And here I would ask myself, if it were my time and my money, would I feel good about how I'm spending it? So yes, even when a company has enough money and there are no crises and the budget is big, still keep a critical mind on how you're using that budget or how you're using those resources that you have. Three would be measure as much as you can. So data, and be vocal about your achievements in a way that the company can understand them. So having data will make gaining stakeholder agreement easier. And going back to our first point, saying no easier too, because you can say, well, according to the data, that is not a priority or there is not a strong business case for that. Four, and this is not something that we touched a lot on, but that we mentioned maybe just once, but I feel strongly about, is involve your teams in the audit so they understand why the main goals and the objectives are selected and let them be part of the KPI and initiative setting. It will help you ensure that you are all rowing in the same direction, but also that everyone feels part of the team. And that especially in times like now, when sometimes motivation is a bit low because people are a bit tired, I think it's very important. And the last one, it's about what we mentioned at the very beginning, maybe evangelization as well, but it push for a strategy and be proactive instead of reactive. Localization is a growth machine. Ask for your seat at the table, be part of the decision making, and believe in your knowledge and what you can bring, what you can contribute to in the company. And don't be shy about it, the opposite, be noisy about it. And I would say those are like my five main takeaways of what we discussed.
That was a fun and very, very interesting conversation, Teresa. I think it was a nice segue, from our previous conversation that we had, and you've kind of concluded everything about enterprise localization audit. And obviously, it can be applied to both smaller enterprises as well as larger ones. And you've talked so much in detail about the different components and different resources that are needed to implement this. I am very impressed. And, I'm glad we have completed that conversation today. You truly represent the standard of how localization should be executed in enterprises. And I would be delighted to continue to speak with you about how you use your experience and ideas to innovate in this space. With that, Teresa, let me thank you for your time and for sharing all your thoughts and experiences with me today.
Happy to be back anytime. And thank you for your time.
Okay, it's time for my roundup of the interview and my analysis as to what has been discussed. Performing a localization audit is a good way to determine where your organization is at when it comes to localization maturity. The results of such an audit are critical to be interpreted properly in order to make the necessary changes or updates to your enterprise localization model in order to ensure all processes, resources, people, and outcomes are aligned with the vision, mission, and the objectives of your organization. Teresa covered some really important topics about how to read, own, and implement the data that comes out of this audit. I agree with Teresa that the localization manager or the person in charge of globalization, whatever their title may be, must oversee the implementation of this audit and ensure it reflects the needs of the localization unit, which could mean more funding, resources, or input and involvement in the upstream and downstream content delivery processes. That brings us to the end of this episode. I am delighted that this podcast was able to deliver information that was hopefully relevant to your localization practice, and even if one person in our industry was able to use this information to improve something, then the goal of this podcast is already accomplished. Don't forget to subscribe to the Translation Company Talk podcast on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or your platform of choice, and give this episode a 5-star ranking. Until next time.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to subscribe and stay tuned for our next episode.